What got you interested in the coincidence of three people missing in the same part of the world at the same time back in the 1930s?
Well, that's just it. You know, it's such a strange coincidence. You know, these young people, you know, two young men and this young girl, were all in the canyon country of southern Utah, missing and feared lost at the same time, with search parties scouring the canyons and, you know, by horse and by foot and by biplane even. And when I first came upon the those stories on the front page of a Utah newspaper, I said, oh, there's got to be a story here, you know. And I had no idea if there was enough material to write about, because Dan Thrapp, one of the young men, I only had two newspaper clippings about his experiences. And the young girl, there's very little known, or at least I knew very little initially. So I started looking into these occurrences when I finally got in touch with the relatives, the family of the young girl. They were living in Oklahoma, and they agreed to meet and tell what had been a family secret up to that point. And so I went to Oklahoma, and I knew at that point I had enough material to write about her. And then when I looked into Dan Thrapp, I ended up finding he had kept an extensive journal of his travels and took maybe 200 or 300 photographs. And when the family gave me permission to use those, I knew there was a story there, too. Now, the third person, Everett Ruth, you know, the problem there was, you know, too much material. You know, he'd become a legend, you know, just, you know, as the New York Times said, you know, the most enduring legend of the modern West.
Ever any real reason as to why three people disappeared at the same time? Was this just a complete coincidence, or did you uncover anything in the process of writing this book that may point to maybe a connection between the three?
Well, part of the connection, you know, I think the main connection was is that it was one of the last blank spots on the map. You know, the major newspapers at the time even called it that, you know, starting in the 1920s. You had a 6,000 square mile area. Didn't have any highways entering it, and so that tended to join the, you know, to draw the young adventurous types, you know, these you know, the Everett Ruth, you know, the young artist from Los Angeles, you know, the pure romantic, and then this young scientist who was on a leave of absence from the American Museum of Natural History was drawn into that same area just by rumors of cliff houses that were undisturbed, the cowboys had seen at the distance with binoculars and hadn't entered. And then this young girl was taken there. Well, she was kidnapped from North Texas, and she was taken there also because it was this blank spot. The killer who kidnapped her took her beyond the reach of the law in those days. That was in that Four Corners country, and especially in southeastern Utah. They initially, in that kidnapping, they initially went to Durango. That was their destination. The killer had fooled this young girl into believing her father was on the run from the law, and he'd meet them in Durango. Actually, he had murdered her father without her knowing it, and induced her to accompany him to Colorado, and then eventually over into Utah.
Scott, you're very experienced with exploring southern Utah and talking and writing about explorations. In the course of writing this book and doing a little bit more research into the disappearances and into Everett Ruth, was there anything new or surprising about that familiar landscape that you learned?
Yeah, the first of all, about Everett himself. You know, I first heard his story when I was probably just a few years older than him, when he disappeared at 20. And, you know, I wasn't caught up in the whole cult of personality that surrounded him, you know, because I figured, oh, this guy screwed up, you know, and, you know, he wrote some great descriptive passages, and he had this enthusiasm and this romanticism, but the guy screwed up, and so I was never convinced that he deserved all of the excitement surrounding him. But the more I got into researching him, the more appreciation I had for him and who he was as a person, his pure romantic pursuit of beauty, and this knack of his for turning his travels into aesthetic adventures, you know, and actually turning working on himself as a work of art, you know, and, you know, that's what he was engaged in when he was out there in these wild adventures in the Four Corners country. Yeah, there was new information. I decided just to disregard, you know, other the conclusions other people had come to, And I finally narrowed it down to what I thought was the most direct, simple possibility of what happened to him, and even have a likely area where that might have happened, which was close to his old camp.
For a lot of people, at least, there's a parallel between Everett Roos and Christopher McCandless, who died in Alaska, whose story was told in John Krakauer's book, Into the Wild.
Yeah, and Krakauer actually worked in a chapter on Everett Roos in there, you know, drawing out those parallels. But you know, I think in a lot of us, you know, a lot of people who explore this country, or just even travel, you know, hitting the main destinations and the national parks, there's, in all of us, there's that at least there's a thread of that sense of adventure and that excitement with this dramatic landscape, you know, unequaled anywhere in the world. And it's through the lives of these three people that you can kind of come closer to it or enhance your appreciation of it. And at least it did for me in the writing of the book.